Hi, welcome to our third episode of, I don't even remember what this podcast is called anymore, because it's been that long, so my apologies. Today, it's not David Katz, it is David Brofsky, Rav David Brofsky, who's here with me. Hilariously, in the background, you'll hear David Katz putting wood on the fire. So we're living our little house on the prairie best lives. So, Dave Brofsky, welcome.
Hello, hello.
It's very, very lovely to have you here. We scheduled this meeting, obviously we're running late because that's all me, but I told you to come at 8:57 today to start the podcast because Kibbutz Beautiful Life is sometimes they're like, oh, today there'll just be a blackout for a couple of hours, so I was nervous we weren't going to have our coffee in time. So it is 9:36.
There's no clock here. From my perspective, it's 9.
There's no clock here. It is 9:36. And the lights are still on, and I did make coffee. So it feels like we have the best of all worlds.
We do.
Okay, let's talk. I guess maybe first let's say I really wanted you to come onto this podcast because we had this great experience with the Romanian weddings that we had in the Meshek that we had here. So part of it is I love that we had those weddings and it was so fun. But also people wrote me millions of questions and I sort of muddled through some of them and probably made up incorrect answers for others.
And since then, you've been relentlessly stalking me.
I'm happy about the stalking part because it feels like I care about the truth, whereas my kids would be like, if it's a good enough story, I would just stick with it, even if it wasn't accurate. So I'm happy to like learn a little bit more about the program, about what you do. Yeah, I guess let's start there. I feel like if I were to introduce you, these are the things that I would say. You can fact check them also. We've known you since 1998. You've known David for longer. You were in yeshiva with him. When we got married, you were at our wedding. It's a big joke because David invited, I hope all of Alon Shvut is listening to this right now. David invited his list from Alon Shvut, and it was hilarious because when we moved to Alon Shvut, not all those people were so nice to us. It was more people that we didn't invite to the wedding that were like, hey, we'll be your friends. And the people that we did were like, I'm not so sure about that. So you get the double gold star of you were at our wedding, and we became great friends with you and Molly over these many years. That's how I would introduce you, but I feel like there might be a more professional way to introduce you. So
okay, I'll start. How's that?
That's really
okay,
helpful.
First of all, I'm happy to be here. I'm always happy to be where the Katzes are, especially if I'm drinking coffee. So, and of course, Rosh Tzurim here is
I would say the other nice thing about the coffee that you're drinking is I made it because Dikla wasn't here yet. So I would have said, hold out, Dikla will be here and she'll will make you good coffee. But we were nervous that electricity was going to go off. So I made you coffee and I think you drank it.
I did. You did an excellent job.
Okay, guys, you heard it here.
So I'm happy to be here. I will admit that, this whole podcasting is, you're very natural, this format. And as you know, Molly is also very natural at talking, meaning that I'm more like writing, so I'll try my best. It's not my natural...
I'm not concerned. Also, I believe that most of your professional career is teaching, so I assume
I stand up and... Okay, so maybe I'll begin by introducing myself.
That'll be perfect.
Besides, I know you guys for years and you're good friends, and why? What it has to do with why I'm here. So in addition to the teaching that I do for many, many years in Midrashit and Nevam and other places and the writing, over the years I've been involved in conversion. Conversion meaning of non-Jews to Judaism. And I wear a number of hats, meaning the major conversion, outlet for me is that I work in Giur Kalaha, which means I function as a dayan, like a conversion judge. And also in the office, sort of like office rabbi, rabbinic liaison, etc.
What's the name of the organization?
Giur Kehalacha.
Giur Kehalacha.
Giur Kehalacha. They're under the auspices of Itim, which is also a wonderful organization. And we focus on Israelis, meaning citizens, who are not Jewish. Either maybe they made Aliyah from the former Soviet Union and their mother wasn't Jewish, and we know that's a large issue in the state of Israel, maybe a topic for a different time, but that's an enormous issue here, and I'm very involved in that. Once you get involved in conversion, people find you from all over the world? Because there aren't many people willing to sort of dirty themselves with this issue, which is unfortunate because it's
at the because it's a politically charged
issue? It's politically charged and halachically charged. And once they know that you're in it, then from all over the world, they seek you out. So in addition to the regular Israeli conversions, again, which is a whole other conversation, people, over the years in different Bate Din, I've been involved with people come from various countries. It could be from England and China and Austria and Poland and South America.
They're all coming here.
They're coming here, and for various reasons, they need to do conversion in Israel. Often they will come with their local rabbi because there's no functioning Beit Din in their communities.
So a standard community, let's say somewhere in London, they obviously do have
London...
I'm just tossing it out.
You're 100% right. There are two types. There are countries that have no functioning Bate Din. For example, Poland is an example where they have, I don't want to say they have vibrant Jewish communities, but they do have rabbis there in their Jewish communities. But there's no one there willing to do conversion for various political reasons. I won't go any deeper than that, but for various reasons, everything is outsourced. So they have various people they send to, the chief rabbi of Poland, others outsource to other people. And there are other countries that do that as well, South America, and we are one of the addresses that they'll turn to us and say, can you help us out?
Okay, does that mean, now I have more questions.
Go for it. We didn't even get to our topic.
I know, we didn't even get to our topic, but now I feel like, wait, I just want to understand more. So in those countries, do they then say, okay, we're going to come to Israel and you're going to walk us through this process? Or are they come to our country and sort of work with us in our country of origin?
Generally speaking, they come ready, meaning you have people who learned in the communities and studied with the rabbi or studied, local, Judaism, and they're already going to shul and that type of thing. But the only thing missing in the process is that final moment, the conversion, the Beit Din. And they need someone to do it for them.
The final seal.
The final seal. And the rabbi or the community is willing to take upon themselves all the other responsibilities, but they just need that, the rabbis, and they need the Beit Din to do it. And they want to find a Beit Din that they're comfortable with, that has recognition in their communities and maybe surrounding communities. And therefore, they'll turn to one or two Bate Din I'm involved in, and turn to us, and they'll fly out. And the truth is, Alon Shvod, I should mention, has...
which is where we live,
Where we will live. And they have actually one of the more well-known Bate Din Legior, which I'm not currently involved with. I'm not involved with them. Was founded by Rev Rosen, and then afterwards headed by Rev Pearl. Both of them passed away. The Beit Din there is continuing, and there too, people come from around the world to convert in Alon Shvod. Because they don't have functioning Bate Din in their countries. There are other countries that have functioning Bate Din, but for whatever reason, it's too hard. Meaning the Bate Din aren't so sympathetic towards Giur, they take too long, they charge too much money. You have cases like that.
So there is this political element to what you're saying in different countries, in surrounding countries.
Every country has its own story, for sure. There are countries where there's politics, there's countries where there's just no Beit Din. There could be no Beit Din because there's politics. But so I try and stay out of the politics. My field is not the Lashon Hara. My field is the
I know that's something that's obviously quite difficult for me because, what I'm saying? You just want a little bit of...
I want to understand when they come who I'm talking to, and I want to be able to navigate their communities. I don't want to undermine local rabbinic authority. You know what I'm saying?
There's a sensitivity component
for sure,
to it.
For sure, and it's very sensitive.
Okay.
So those are two hats, let's say, that I wear. One is, aside from all my other stuff, is the Israeli conversions, and every now and then people coming from abroad. And the people, I'm getting phone calls. I won't even mention the countries, but in cities around the world, and they're like, we need help. Okay.
So two more questions, and then let's go to Romania.
Yeah.
But I guess my questions would be, one, on the one hand, I want to think of you because it just is a great visual of this lone renegade guy, rabbi, who's converting lots of people.
Right.
It doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's not that it's you and a few other people, but I do believe that that world is a small world, the world of people who are involved in Giur.
The world of Giur is a very small world. It's important to exactly, meaning when you're converting someone, So first of all, I think it's beautiful, and like you're giving them or helping them attain a Jewish identity. But if there's no recognition, then like you haven't really helped them, or you've helped them a little bit, but it's very difficult for them. So it's not really renegade. Like you want to be a person that's respected, and that you're able to work with other communities, and that you have other like a rabbinic backing behind you. So I wouldn't call it renegade conversion.
I would assume, like, so many times in the Torah, it talks about how to treat people who want to convert. So it feels like there's this mandate that's out there already to be treated in a certain way or to be seen in a certain way, that I don't think that people who are converting always feel that way. They feel seen.
For sure. And those who, you know, my occasional Facebook posts every now and then, I speak about cases that I've encountered regarding that. And you're right, we are commanded to be kind and considerate to converts, and there are a lot of stuff going on in the world that's very unfortunate. But
you and I both have kids who are hitting that age of like dating or like college or real life, and I feel like the conversation always skews for me of like kindness is what matters. Yes. And I don't know that I thought that at that young age, but I think as we get older, like the value really is in treating all humans, but really with kindness.
For sure. Look, I also really believe, also from experience, that the kinder those who are involved in conversion are, whether it be the teachers, or the administrators, people along the way, and certainly the dayanim, the more positive the impact is. There are many people that I've met over the years that have converted, but they walk away from the Beit Din with a negative feeling. And it takes all the will out of their... They don't want to continue living such an intense Jewish life. They're just angry and bitter about it. But if you leave like a Beit Din or a process that embraced you and supported you, then hopefully you continue to grow.
Oh, the electricity has officially gone out now, which is lovely.
And it's only 9:01.
It will stay that way forever. I find that, I guess I remember when David and I were, you have to go to the Rabbanut to sign up when you get married. And at the time, I think it's improved. Let's say that it has improved. But at the time, it was so politically charged that you knew that there were so many couples that were showing up to sign up that were so angry about it that we came with our pockets filled with candies. And we just gave everybody candies. Like, woo, we're all signing up to get married. It'll be great. There is this idea of taking what's been politicized in this country and sort of trying to find a way to step away from the politics and really understand the heart.
Like religious services, obviously they have to be provided with halachic integrity, etc., but they have to be provided with kindness. And Sohar, for example, one of their major contributions to the field of weddings, I imagine that when you got married here, there was Sohar, but people didn't go through Sohar. But that's really the feeling, that every step of the process in Sohar, which is really an arm of the Rabbanut, but they're in control of their own arm, is filled with kindness and efficiency, and people walk away with a very positive impression.
Okay.
But we're digressing.
We're not even digressing, because I'm literally the next thing is to digress just one more second. When you're not involved in Geirut, where are you? What else are you doing?
Well, I teach, you know what I'm saying? So most of the time I'm teaching Midrash at Lindenbaum. Over the years I've taught in Torah Vavodah, known as TVA. Writing, as you know, I've been writing for the VBM, the Virtual Beit Midrash for Yeshiva, for 20-something years, which launched a number of books. Our first book launch was in your living room.
Oh my
years
gosh.
Ago, remember that?
Yes.
Hilchot
Tefillah. Wow. Yeah.
Hosted.
Yeah, listen, the next book will be here at the Meshech, so I'm thrilled about that.
Be'ezrat Hashem.
Wow, that first book launch. Yeah.
That was a lot of years ago. So all of this whole other life of mine is really like on the side, but it does consume me. Meaning, again, like I described, like, and people start coming from around the world, and you know, the truth is you're just trying to do good things and not charging money, and very complicated, but trying to help people.
You're saying there isn't a business element to this?
I'll put it this way. I don't have a business element. There unfortunately are those who make it a business. Conversion is the gateway to the Jewish people, and that alone is a prescription for corruption, right? Meaning when you are a gatekeeper, then you can be corrupt. And unfortunately, there's corruption everywhere in the world. And conversion has always been prone to corruption. Baruch Hashem, I'm not, you know, and I surround myself with rabbis who are not, you know, try to be honest people, and certainly in Gior Halacha, you know, we're, the Israeli conversions, again, we're an organization doesn't charge anything. They receive limudim and even in their weddings and conversion for nothing. I'm not saying that everything in the world has to be free, but really, we try to do good things.
Who does fund it? No, really. Like, is it?
Gior Halacha is under your team. Not my. Any you know, team. Seth Farber is the head of the team.
Got
Maybe
it.
One day invite him for a podcast.
Sure. No, we'll just link to donate here to your team. Okay, I understand.
But we have had cases where people come like from across the world to sit with us in the Beit Din, and they'll just be like, I don't understand. You don't want money. Nothing. You know. Try to help people.
Okay. Okay. I understand this part now. Now take a Steromania.
Okay. So there's a whole third type of conversion. Right, the first is the whole Israel thing, then there are people from Chutz Laaretz. Maybe 6 or 7 years ago, we're approached, doesn't matter how, but the head of the community of Oradea in Romania flies out. Never heard of Oradea. I didn't even know that Romania was still a country, meaning I wasn't sure if it was like a former country or a present country or whatever. And he flies out with his local rabbi, basically, who functions in the community to meet with us. When I say us, at that point we're sitting in Or Torah buildings, meeting with Rav Shuki Reich, an experienced Rosh Kollel and Dayan, etc., and one or two others. And they say, listen, we need help with conversion. Romania, there's no conversion going on. No one's converting in the country. We can't get conversion. The Rabbanut won't come to us. We're stuck. And they say, why we need it? First of all, Romania, this is what they told us, has a high percentage of intermarriage.
Okay,
their narrative is that during World War II, during the Holocaust, that women were sent off to death camps and men were sent to work camps. Men came back to Romania after the war, and there were no Jewish women. So that began a wave of intermarriage, and you find yourself 70 plus years later, with a country that intermarriage is all over the place. I mean, when I tell you, everyone's intermarried, everyone.
How big is the Jewish community there?
It's relatively small, especially a large percentage of the remaining Jewish community made Aliyah over the years. In fact, at a certain point, Israel bought Jews. They paid the government of Romania to bring Jews, per Jew, to bring them to Israel.
What year was that? When was that?
Krzyzewski. I don't remember that. Maybe 70? I don't know. Something like that.
So post-Holocaust, you're saying, at least according to Romanian lore,
right,
Romanian men who survived because they were in work camps, and most women and children did not survive. So of the men who survived and those who chose to return to Romania, they married women who weren't Jewish because there weren't women who were Jewish.
I also remember it's communism, and there's you know, yeah, like the whole Judaism is depressed and oppressed. Listen, maybe we'll put on the table, I don't know if we'll talk about it, but the whole world in many ways is like that. We live in our little bubbles of like, you know, Alon Shvut and Cleveland and North Jersey, and we think that like everyone around us is Jewish. America currently has 50-60% intermarriage, which means that outside the Orthodox community, it's like 70% for two or three generations. How many halachic Jews do you think are in your average JCC, you know, in America? Very, very few in your hillel.
But also to the larger world, and even to the larger Jewish world outside of the bubble, to be a halachic Jew it doesn't really matter. Meaning, it's
100%, and that's true in countries, you know, all around the world, in European countries especially, and especially in countries like Romania, that Judaism was bichlal, you know, sort of suppressed for many, many years. So if you fast forward, let's say, to recent years, there's a revival, an awakening of Judaism. You know, like, we find it funny that, like, why would people, maybe we're a little too cynical, but they love Judaism, meaning, and they're coming back to their roots. And all of a sudden, Jewish centers around the world are filling up, and shuls, but they're realizing that they're not Jewish. Their wives aren't Jewish, their husbands aren't, nobody's Jewish anymore. So that's a little bit what's going on around the world. So they come to us from Romania, they say, listen, we have like an awakening going on in the city called Oradea, but we need conversion. Like conversion has to be a part of an outlet, like the light at the end of the tunnel. He like said, we have, you know, in shul every morning, like 20, 30 men, but we don't have a minion. You know what that means? Every morning, 20, 30 people, there's no minion, halachic minion of 10 Jewish men.
And there's interest to become halachic.
Yeah, they're coming to shul, meaning, and also, by the way, if there's no light at the end of the tunnel, if there's no hope, then your motivation to pursue your Judaism is obviously lost. Like at a certain point, you need to know there's hope, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Now, I want to add another piece of information about Oradea. Oradea was formerly known as Groysvarden. Groysvarden is the town of Rav Amital, where Rav Amital grew up in. So for people like us, you know, from Yeshivat Har Etzion, all of a sudden, you think about Rav Amital's town where he grew up, and like we're like, okay, we got to help these people.
Well, also, Rav Amital was the founding, he was the founding Rosh Yeshiva of
Yeshivat Har Etzion. And by the way, Rav Amital was sent to a labor camp during the war.
So consistent with
consistent with this story. But anyway, it doesn't really matter. They come to us and they say, this is something that we need. And the truth is, I've researched it. Romania in general, it's definitely something that's necessary for growing Jewish community in Romania. So we're in touch with them, and we're Zooming with their conversion class, etc. And then about a year before Corona, I think, we flew out there to this beautiful European synagogue that they've invested in, and they've, you know, refurnished. And Baruch Hashem, we had a Beit Din, and we converted like a number of people there. We had a few weddings, and it was beautiful. That was pre-Corona.
Okay.
That's the way we gauge things nowadays.
Right? Yeah.
Pre and post. And all along,
hopefully
we're,
post.
All along, we're, you know, engaged with them, and we couldn't go back, obviously, during Corona. We hoped to. At a certain point, we did go back. We went back another time. I'm trying to remember. I think even last summer, maybe, we went back. And also, Baruch Hashem, the Beit Din, and weddings afterwards, because obviously when people convert, adults that are already married, so you have a wedding afterwards. And in the community, and all the community members come, it's inspiring for the entire community. I follow them on Facebook, I see what's going on.
But I have a few Facebook friends from the weddings here now.
They friended you.
Love it.
I know, they're very into the Jewish world, so all of a sudden, so you probably see their posts. So, and all of a sudden, and not only this Oradea community is, by the way, Oradea, Groysvarden, that's where Vishnitz was. Vishnitz, their home was in Groysvarden.
The way that your eyes light up when you talk about, like, ancient or Jewish cities, like, I'm trying to figure, like, what would get me to be, like, that excited. But, like, to understand, like, the strong connection back there. So, okay, now go on.
Vishnitz, obviously, I'm not Vishnitz or Chassid, but it was a real, like, Romania's, Eastern Europe with Jewish communities and Hasidic
communities.
The bakery
does have a Vishnitz dough that they make, so maybe there is a connection. There's a standard dough.
And I have to admit that the whole Rav Amital thing sits in the back of my mind. It makes me very emotional.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I think after the first Beit Din, I came back and I WhatsApp pictures to Rav Brin, who's Rav Amital's son-in-law, and to Rav Yehuda Gilad. I thought maybe they'd get into the, you know. So they actually did. I think one of them told me their son went to go visit the city. And,
wow.
Like I'm sitting there in Oradea and the shul, thinking, wow, Rav Amital learned in like a little cheder here. Okay, anyway. So there's more learning going on there. By the way, in June, they flew me out to participate in the wedding of a parliament member who he converted his wife. A large Jewish wedding in a major shul in Bucharest, filled with politicians, and I see all my people converted. You know, and it's like a happening thing. Okay, so, but there are other communities that are getting involved, and I'm coming to now what happened in this very place that we're sitting in Rosh Tzuri. In addition to Oradea, there are other communities. There's a community called Satu Mare. Satu Mare, we know, is, let's say, Satmar, right? The roots of Satmar Hasidim, Satu Mare. And Satu Mare, a couple years ago, was dead. Jewish community, dead. Nothing there. Then there's an awakening, and there's a president of the community, and there are one or two women there, and they start getting into it. And they start, more and more of them are attending conversion classes. And it reached a point where a group of them came to Israel. We couldn't go there for technical reasons. There were some mikveh issues. to Efrat, and along with some other people, we did conversions of members of the Satumari community.
Wait, they came to Israel?
They came to Efrat that very day that we had the weddings here.
Okay.
That morning we did, or actually 2 days, conversions in Mikvah, obviously Tevilot, in the afternoon. As you know, a week or two before, this was obviously the first thing came to my mind. Like, where else would we do weddings? Like, we have, I have to call Devorah.
The truth matters, like, I don't even think I blinked. Like, it just felt like, oh, of course we should do weddings
of
here.
Course,
like, why wouldn't we do weddings here?
I knew that you would be excited, and I knew it would be perfect. And it was perfect. And we came here, and we did, I don't remember, five, something like that?
We did five weddings here.
And I want to say a little bit of what I've seen since then. Now, obviously, they like friending people, these Romanians. So they friended you, and they friended me. And
listen, a few weeks afterwards, our family was in Hashmonaim for Shabbat, and that the last couple that got married put a bunch of really adorable kids. Like, it was just so beautiful. They're just walking down the street on Shabbat in Hashmonaim.
Oh, the family was
the
still
family
there.
Was still here, and it was like, it was unbelievable, like, just the joy. First of all, for me to see them.
But
they were so excited. I was so excited.
Wow.
For me, the visual was just incredible.
That
like, it was
incredible.
Just that, but also the visual here of, like, this makeshift chuppah. I would say more comments than should have happened were, like, my David was in a t-shirt, like, holding one of the poles under the chuppah, and we were, like, FaceTiming it and Instagramming live it, and we're putting it everywhere, and people were like, why couldn't he just put on a shirt? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know.
I think he even wrote that he put on his good
shirt. His best, his favorite t-shirt. That was what we could muster up, but it was this, like, it was so simple and so meaningful, and people from the kibbutz showed up, and there's a girls' school on Rosh Tzurim. One grade showed up to sing. Yes, to sing for them. Like, it was just, we threw a lot of candy.
Look, we often do weddings literally after the Beit Din, after the mikvah, and they're in a shul, and they're lovely, but this was powerful. This was really wonderful. And since then, you know, I get the Facebook post of Satumari and Aradia. I have to tell you, Satumari was dead a year ago. They brought in chazanim for the chagim. Pictures, Tishrei, you'll look at it afterwards. Meaning they have a full shul on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Simchas Torah and Hakafos. And I did try and figure out who's taking those pictures.
Best not to ask questions, I think.
They had a non-Jew taking pictures. But what I want to say is that unlike the other conversions, where it's more like individuals, where we're here to help them, if it's really appropriate, to join the Jewish people. Here, there's an aspect of community building, of literally reviving a community, and conversion plays a role, because if conversion isn't there, then it's a dead end. How far can a community go if you can't provide them with conversion, right? You have to make whole families Jewish, and then they make a minyan, and then they come to shul every day or every Shabbos. That's what's going on. It's incredible. I see the posts. There's a revival. We sat last night with our man in Aradia.
I think you have to give a little bit of background to him, because he definitely, in this space during the weddings, was like beyond, just beyond.
So we are sort of, well, first of all, I want to shout out to the president of the community of Aradia. His name is Mr. Kolpelman. And He just made everything happen over the years, meaning as the president of the community and working within the Romanian Federation, and he's provided support and really made it happen. But his, you know, the rabbi, I guess one could say, who's been there, I don't know how many years, I'm going to say 10, maybe a few more, he's retired, he's in his late 70s probably.
Israeli,
and he had a full career here, you know, as an educator and in Misrad HaChinuch, etc. And he spent, you know, the past 10 plus years there. He's a powerhouse, as you remember.
Yes.
and he was here at the wedding, Sraya Akav.
Lots of singing. He would lead the crowd.
Exactly. So he's Israeli, so comes to visit. He came to Israel for his granddaughter's wedding. We had a meeting with him last night. Actually, we're the meeting. We'll barbecue with him. So he's telling us, you know, what's going on in the next group. And Baruch Hashem.
Your work in Romania will continue? Meaning there are more people that are interested in converting?
There are more people. Listen, I want to... The real work is the people in Romania, because they're doing 99% of the work of enabling the revival and facilitating and the education, and they're doing it. But we are just sort of the regarding this one little issue of conversion, you know, we're happy to help them if we can help them out, and that really, I don't know, encourages and in the end will enable these communities to grow, then we're happy to help them.
Are there other communities that have similar issues in terms of there are people on the ground that can do most of the work and then need that final seal, or is it something
that's... In Romania, for sure there are. This Thursday, today's Tuesday, so in 2 days, there's another group coming from Romania, from a city called Timișoara. I don't know how to pronounce that in Romanian or in English, so let's assume it's something like that.
No one, there's no one here that's correcting you.
And they're coming with their rabbi. And the truth is also we would have preferred to go to the community, because it's much more powerful when the conversion, I mean, I'm not looking to fly anywhere, but like it's much more, Molly's not looking for me to fly, you know, I was looking to fly, we're working, but when you do it in the community, it's very powerful. But it didn't work out for various reasons. They're coming here. But they're going to have a very meaningful Israel trip. They're going to come. They're going to do conversions. They're going to go for Shabbat to this person's kibbutz. He's also Israeli. He goes back and forth. And have their Aliyah LaTorah. They're going to have Shabbat together. And go to the Kotel together. And then they're going to go back. And their community will be strengthened. Are there other countries like this? Yes. I have a number of various communities that over time have reached out to us. Where the feeling is... First of all, there are individuals who need help.
Right. This is something interesting because it's an entire community that's going through that process together.
It could be Israelis that go to, you know, a city in Europe and they meet a young local, meaning hopefully they're also young, you know, somewhere in other ways, but anyway, and get married and then and they join the community. Listen, we know, unfortunately, that many people become much more connected to Judaism and Chutzlars than they do in Israel. We're familiar with that phenomenon. And therefore, we see many Israelis that here were not so connected, and they go to Chutzlaretz, and all of a sudden, they're daily attenders at shul and Shabbat meals, and
because that's a way to connect.
And then they have like their non-Jewish girlfriend, but their boyfriend, whatever, and all of a sudden, they're engaged, often more engaged, you know, and whatever. That's one model. Obviously, we see that, but there are other communities that really need an injection, right? Meaning, conversion can really help their community. We'll see. I don't know. Look, I'm not looking to, you know, I know that sometimes we read newspapers about people travel around the world and they're like, it's not my thing or anyone I know. It's not our, you know, it's not our our mission in life. But, you know, whatever. If we can help people, so we try. That's the way I'll say it.
That's very nice. In the past, you've written books on tefillah. You've written a book on Jewish mourning. You've written a book on...
Moadim.
Would this become a book? Is it too sensitive?
Look, I have a couple more projects I'd like to work on in the future in terms of writing. In general, I enjoy writing. It's like a very good outlet. I don't think that I would write about, like, adventures. That's not my style.
That's
your style. Maybe we can work together.
That's right. David's adventures as the renegade rabbi.
Not really, not my style. But one of the projects, meaning I have sort of a skeleton of a book on conversion and kashrut and other things. One day I'll set aside time to continue writing.
All right. Well, I'm excited to let you know that obviously the book launch will be here. We'll be thrilled. I would also say that for us, we were just starting out when you reached out to run the chuppot here, do the weddings here, and it felt sacred, like this beautiful way to like launch a business. We had maybe opened our door a week before, and all of a sudden it felt like it was literally these brachot being given in our space. It was this
times five.
It was this very spiritual experience that we didn't expect. Like, I love, like, oh, it's fun and it's cool and we'll take great pictures. No, but in the moment, like, I really felt like I teared up a number of times. It felt like it was really, like, almost consecrating this space as something very, very beautiful. So I appreciate that.
First of all, I'm happy that you gave us the space and that we could, work together on it. And you should know it had a real impact. Like, you are all friends with all these people on Facebook, and I don't know whether you see. it gave a real boost to these families. The families that were here, you're talking about the president of the community, you're talking about that young family on Chashma. I don't know if they ever have they left yet.
I don't know what the plan is.
You know, and they go back, and all of a sudden they're building their community. And we spoke about, like, at the Chuchot, if you remember, you know, our mission wasn't just to offer you conversion, that to go back. And by the way, in Oradia, this town, so I spoke with our man in Oradia last night, Soraya Cobb, they're building yeshiva.
Wow.
He told me they're building yeshiva. I don't know who's going to go there.
Wow.
But they're building yeshiva.
They'll have,
Oradia.
Like, Kollel Torah Mitzion boys flying out.
But they're building yeshiva, they're building another mikvah, they're building, meaning it's a process. And, you know, I feel honored that I was given the opportunity to play a small role in it.
Great. To find out more about things that Rabbi Dave Brodsky, or just Dave, is busy doing on our page on the website that hosts this podcast, you'll see links to various projects, to E-Team, and you can follow along. Thank you so much. It was totally, totally great. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for drinking my coffee.